Already, I can start our recording, and Nikki can kick it off if you give me a second here.
Ready, ready when you are.
All right, here we go. You'll hear the little computer lady talk at us.
Recording in progress.
Thanks, Wayne. Welcome everyone to the January 17th meeting of Easton's Affordable Housing Trust. Do we need to read the remote meeting connection instruction or the remote meeting procedures?
We do. I'm happy to do that. This meeting will be conducted remotely over Zoom. Attendance by board commission members will be remote, and remote attendance shall count for quorum. The meeting may be broadcast live and will be recorded on ECAT. You can attend this meeting by using the Zoom link in the posted agenda. And while conducting meetings remotely, we'll endeavor to keep meeting operations as close to our standard procedures as possible. Attendees are encouraged to use the raise hand function or the chat function if they wish to be recognized by the chair and contribute or participate in the conversation. Guests will be attendees until the agenda item comes up, and then they're promoted to panelists. And all votes will be roll call votes, where the board members are requested to state their last name and their vote so that our minutes taker and the public know who's taking what action. And we should start off with a roll call vote to confirm attendance. And perhaps, Nikki, would it make more sense if I just call on people so we don't have people talking over each other? Would that be an easier way to manage?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Okay, so to confirm attendance, Dostumian?
Present.
Rodriguez?
Present.
Okay, Stacy?
Stacy, present.
Okay, and Sheedy?
Present.
And Stephen?
Present.
Thank you. And Miller?
Present.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. And that's the administrative part of stuff. And Nikki, do you have a copy of the agenda with you?
Or
do you want
I
me
do.
To- oh, okay, great.
I do. Okay, so the first order is to review and vote to accept the October 4th meeting minutes. So has everyone had a chance to review the October 4th meeting minutes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyone want to make a motion to approve them?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, so a motion by Sheedy, a second by Stephen?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, thanks. And we'll call a vote. Here we go again. Dostumian?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Rodriguez, yes.
Thank you. Stacy?
Stacy, yes.
Thank you. Sheedy?
Sheedy, yes.
Stephen?
Stephen, yes.
And Miller?
Miller, yes.
Thanks.
Excellent. All right, moving on to 69 Howard Street, Chapter 61, right of first refusal.
So I have some not great news as an update on that. The group may remember that at our October meeting, the group voted to ask the select board to exercise the town's right of first refusal, and also voted to appropriate $200,000 for the purchase price of 69 Howard Street, the parcel coming out of Chapter 61. In the ensuing months, there was a conversation with a potential buyer, with the sellers, to try to understand what the deal was between the two. And the sellers have withdrawn their sale. So they're not moving forward with their sale. Therefore, the select board voted to, I believe, Jen, take no action, since there's no longer a viable sale and a viable purchase and sale on the table. So unfortunately, that right of first refusal is not going forward.
Oh, it was too good to be true.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Any reason? Do we know if it'll ever come back up, or?
Unknown. I would not be surprised if the owners are considering other options for removing it from Chapter 61 over time, or paying the back taxes for that. I don't know their thinking. I've not been, part of the conversation with them. But I do not know that it will come up as okay. Chapter 61 right of first refusal again. I think that's unlikely.
Okay, got it. Okay, thanks for the update.
You bet.
Moving on to 26 Quonicet and 10 Morse Road.
Folks may remember these two parcels were acquired by the trust and then put out as an RFP and received responses and or acquired by the trust in 2020, right as the pandemic began, and then put out as RFPs. South Shore Habitat for Humanity was the successful respondent. We've been working for the past year or so with South Shore Habitat so they could get all of their permits in place. 26 Pequannocket is a slightly undersized lot, so they needed a variance before they did their tear down and construction. They got that. And then 10 Morse is proposed as a two-family, so they need a special permit from the planning board, and they went through that process, took a couple of months, and they got that special permit. So long story short, last year, both properties transferred, and South Shore Habitat for Humanity now owns both properties. And we've also transferred the grants. You remember the trust offered $35,000 grants for each property to help with site costs and development costs. And we've made those grants and transferred that money out. And they are, South Shore Habitat for Humanity is looking to start Pequannocket sooner than Morse, you know, do the demo work, maybe do some stuff over the winter. And they also got a substantial grant of, I believe, about $90,000 from the state for housing development, which will help them with that project as well. So that's pretty exciting. And hello, both Nickies. they have transferred. And we will also be looking forward later on this year. I spoke with their development director, their fundraiser person, and also my contact over there. People may remember for the 10 Electric Avenue, there was a larger public meeting where Habitat introduced themselves to the community and, you know, talked about their programs, their projects and such. So they would be looking to do that again in spring for these two projects. So stay tuned for that and also for volunteer opportunities. And that's my update on this.
Thank you. Sorry about that, Wayne. I was trying to switch.
No problem.
Seamlessly. Okay, so what are next steps here? Or is there any action for today?
I think for Pequannocket and Morse, no. Yeah. The properties are transferred, the grants are made.
Yeah.
We just stay tuned to try and help expedite questions they may have with the town, but they've resolved all of their permitting issues and so forth. We help set up a public meeting sometime in spring.
That's awesome news.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up is MBTA Communities and the Planning Board presentation of state law and Easton's plans for compliance.
Hi. So thanks for having us here. I'm Peter. I probably know Stephanie. So I think, thanks for everything you guys do for the community. I think I reviewed kind of your action plan for the next few years. So you've already kind of considered this MBTA zoning. So you probably know what the basics are, that the state passed a law a couple of years ago that the MBA and adjacent communities need to comply with certain multifamily housing requirements now. So we've done some work and had some meetings and met with lots of residents and some other boards already to get some input. And so Stephanie has a presentation to start with some basics about the requirements and how we plan to how we're thinking about conforming with this. So just, you know, go by the usual protocol, kind of jump in when you have questions at the appropriate time. And we look forward to, we're still open to ideas. Nothing's, kind of decided upon yet. That's why we're meeting with everyone right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, Stephanie, you're muted there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Peter. And everybody, I know a few faces, but not all. So I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Stephanie Danielson. I'm the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the Town of Easton. And I work with Peter, who is the Chair of the Planning Board. So let me share my screen.
Do I need to do anything on my end? Nope. Good. Okay.
Nope. So everybody can see the slideshow there?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so as Peter mentioned, what we're here to talk about tonight is the requirement for MBTA communities to adopt a zoning district that allows multifamily housing by right. I'm going to talk about what the MBTA communities law is, what it means to Easton, why comply, and then Peter and I will talk about the steps the town has taken towards compliance, and then we'll open it up. Although what I would like to say is I find this presentation goes well. If you have a question or you're unclear on something I've said, please let me know and we can add, I can answer the question or add clarification. So basically the MBTA communities law is a part of a bill that was enacted into law in 2021. It was part of the economic development bill. And what it did is it added section 3A to chapter 40A. Chapter 40A is what is commonly referred to as the Zoning Act. And section 3A requires that communities that are identified as MBTA communities adopt a zoning district that allows multifamily zoning by right. And what that means is that a developer or someone who wants to develop their property with multifamily zoning can do so without requiring a special permit, either from the planning board or the zoning board of appeals. They basically really just need to pull a building permit or if they need a septic system, something from a permit from the Board of Health. But the zoning can't prohibit multifamily zoning. And in most communities in Massachusetts and pretty much across the country, a lot of communities have zoning that either prohibits multifamily housing or it makes it very difficult. And in Easton right now, we do allow multifamily zoning by right in the business district if you have 60,000 square feet of land, and it only allows you to build three dwelling units with a maximum of three bedrooms. And that's three bedrooms in total, not three bedrooms per unit. So that's pretty restrictive, and it doesn't make economic sense for most people. And what the state was trying to do was reduce those local regulatory barriers to multifamily housing. The reason it was tied to the economic development bill is because housing in Massachusetts is becoming very difficult for people to acquire, whether it's homes or rental, and affordable housing in particular is there's just not enough of it across the state. And what that does is it makes it very expensive to live in the state. So we are starting to see people moving to other states as a result. And it's very difficult to attract new people to the state. And in turn, what you're doing is reducing the market for people who own businesses and provide services. And it also makes it difficult for businesses to grow and for businesses to come to the state because they need a reliable workforce. And if people can't afford to live in the state, whether they're professionals, they're tradespersons, they're your public safety people, it becomes more and more expensive for them to live in the state and stay here.
You know, Stephanie, I was thinking, you know, when we mentioned like what like as of right means, and what we might allow as of right, and then by special permit, which we have already set up for different zones, you know, for multifamily. And then also like with like 40B, right? Which was, you know, kind of more administrative, you know, a rule from the state, and then kind of goes around the planning board to the Board of Appeals. Maybe we can just kind of explain to the boards as we go along that as of right means, you know, you still have to go through a site plan review process. But it's a little more straightforward than a special permit, which requires a little more, possibly like concessions required by like the planning board. So
yeah,
as of right, like you say, if you have a conforming, like a single family lot, that's, you know, 40,000 square feet with 150 feet of frontage and meets other basic criteria. You don't have to go to the planning board, right? You can just go to the building inspector and say, I want to build a house with that fits all the, you know, all the other rules in the zoning bylaw, and it doesn't even go to the planning board. So that's sort of the what as of right means, whereas a special permit is a kind of a different type of, you know, allowance that we can create in the zoning bylaw to allow maybe like, say, like a multifamily such as Quesit Commons or some of the smaller multifamily that are starting to sprout up along Foundry Street and in some other areas. And then whereas 40B is kind of a separate state law process that goes around the planning board and kind of direct through the Board of Appeals and maybe the Board of Selectmen if it's a select people, if it's, you know, a friendly 40B. So I don't know if that helps explain what the difference there is and why when we say, you know, we might have a restrictive multifamily environment to a certain extent, that's because it's the state is saying you have to have this much space and allow this many units, possibly potential by right. That's what they're saying there. So
yeah,
maybe Steph and I will find a concise way to kind of explain that in the future, but that's my quick version of it.
Yeah, I think, thank you for adding that, Peter. And I think a key point is a special permit, while there, a special permit can be denied by the planning board mm-hmm. if it doesn't meet all the criteria that they feel is necessary for the special permit. Whereas, as Peter pointed out, if you're going to construct a single family home in Easton and you're in the residential district and you have a lot that's of the minimum size required, you don't need a permit at all, that permit from the planning board.
So say, for example, just on any, like, just hypothetically, like, you know, someone comes up with a special permit application in an area that where it's multifamily is allowed, and they say, okay, based on your special permit criteria, we want to do the maximum of 22 units, right? So usually most developers will want to do the maximum because they want to maximize their profit, just business. But with a special permit, we can say things like, oh, well, you know, let's look at the architecture, make sure this kind of fits with the neighborhood. Maybe we should consider some affordable housing as part of this, you know, to kind of work towards that goal that we have set. You know, it's kind of a, you know, our common community goal. Whereas by right, depending on the situation, might not allow the planning board and other boards as much input. They just have to conform with the basic requirements of the bylaw that, you know, that has passed town meeting. So that's kind of the basics of how that works and why we've tended to use special permit as the mechanism for multifamily. It just gives us a little more control, but the state has said you have to make a few changes there. So,
can you? So I want to explain what an MBTA community is. So it's one of the slide says 65 there, but there are 177 MBTA communities in total. And they're designated by state law as a community that is either a host to an MBTA transit station, or it is adjacent to a community that has an MBTA transit station within its bounds, town bounds. Easton, it does not have a transit station at this point in time. So it is considered an adjacent community because three of its neighbors, Stoughton, Brockton, and Mansfield, all have transit stations. The basic requirements of this zoning, which Peter was alluding to, again, the multifamily has to be allowed by right, can't require a special permit, can't impose unreasonable, uneconomic conditions on the development that might be constructed using this zoning. The district has to allow a minimum of 15 units per acre. And there can be no restriction, age restrictions. Sometimes zoning restricts the age of occupancies, the age of occupants. It can't restrict the size of the dwelling units, and it can't restrict the number of bedrooms. And that is in part to encourage family-friendly development, as well as for young professionals or singles. If you're an MBTA community or you are adjacent to an MBTA community where a transit station is within a half mile of one of your municipal bounds, you must locate the district within a half mile of that transit station. Easton is not within a half a mile of any transit station. So in that instance, what the state is encouraging is that you consider putting your district or placing your district in areas that are close to businesses and services. So kind of like a walkable neighborhood that has maybe retail, maybe restaurants, maybe offices located people could walk to, and near transportation corridors, so like main arterial routes. The district must be at least 50 acres in total. It may be comprised of sub-districts, but at least one of the sub-districts has to be 25 contiguous acres, and none of the sub-districts can be less than 5 acres. What the law doesn't do, it does not require new housing development. So this law doesn't say you have to adopt the zoning and then you have to make sure that the housing gets built. All it's saying is we want to reduce those impediments to multifamily zoning by having a zoning district that allows it by right. And if a developer wants to develop in that district, they can. And they can reasonably expect that they'll be able to develop a project that meets the standards. It doesn't require the community to pay for infrastructure to support the housing development in a 3A district. So when we start talking about the districts, you'll see that two of the ones that are being considered are either already completely sewered or partially sewered with the ability to extend the sewer. One of the districts is not, but the state doesn't require that the town build that infrastructure that may be needed to support the development. They believe that the developers know how to make that happen and work, whether it's in the case of Easton, where we have a district that doesn't have sewer, building an on-site sewer treatment plant.
Stephanie, I think Andrew might have his hand up with a question.
Yeah, just to that point, Stephanie, one of the areas, Belmont and Washington, I think is I was glad to see that that was part of the redistricting, because I think that's an opportunity to develop an area that could use it and start connecting sort of the different sections of the town, northeast and southeast and others. But my question would be, just because I know you might get to this later, but if the law, I was wondering if it required that, but the fact that it doesn't, is it still a part of your goals or the town's goals to really incentivize and make sure that some of these, just because they're redistricted, they want to be able to provide developers a ripe opportunity to develop these land and not just say we did it to comply without really pushing the economic development of Easton and some of these prime locations that you've noted? So is that still part of the process as we adopt this?
That was definitely part of the process, was again looking two districts, and I'll talk more about that, but where does it make the most sense? And where would there be opportunities for the development? And Peter can talk more about that when we get to are actually talking about the districts as well.
Thank you.
The law doesn't override the Wetlands Protection Act. And in fact, when you define your district, there's a rather complicated formula that's embedded in a model. We have to feed it a bunch of information, including GIS data, about the area that includes geographical information. And if your district has wetlands or restricted lands, the model removes those in order to determine whether the capacity of the district meets that 15 units per acre. But the law does not override the Wetlands Protection Act or Title V. And it does not provide options for waivers or exemptions. Communities subject to this requirement must adopt the zoning. And I'll talk in a minute about what it means to comply and not comply, what the penalty is for not complying. Easton's an adjacent community, as I mentioned, and Easton needs to adopt this zoning by the end of this year. So by December 31st, 2024, Easton needs to adopt a complying multifamily zoning district, or we will be out of compliance. Just a quick wrap up. Again, the minimum gross density is 15 units per acre of developable land, 50 acres in total, sub-districts allowed. At least half the district, which would be the 50 acres, must be contiguous parcels, and no sub-districts less than 5 contiguous acres. There's also an additional minimum total capacity for the district. And the way the state is calculating that minimum capacity is it's a percentage of the town's total permanent housing stock. If you're an adjacent community, that percentage is 10%. Easton's total permanent housing stock as of the census of 2020 was 9,128 units. And that means that the district in total needs to be able to accommodate or have a capacity of 913 units. So not just the 15 units per acre, but a total across the whole district of 913 units. And again, it's capacity. It doesn't require that the district be built out. And you'll see that some of the districts, the way we're developing this is through an overlay district, which is allowed by the law. That means that someone can avail themselves of the overlay district, in this case, the multifamily zoning, or they can continue to build or develop under the existing zoning. So the existing zoning doesn't go away, but you have the option of developing under the multifamily. Peter had talked about, he had mentioned site plan review, which is a process that commercial projects are subject to, as well as large housing developments. And really what this does is it gives the town the ability to ensure that any development has adequate accommodations for vehicle movement around and into the site, pedestrian access, in circulation. In this case, they allow the town's exterior architectural design review as long as we've adopted objective criteria on what that architectural design should look like or meet the criteria. And then screening of adjacent properties. So again, to ensure that there's adequate screening between the development and adjacent properties. The site plan review cannot be used to deny a project or impose conditions that make it unfeasible or impractical to exist, proceed. Communities are allowed. Now, Peter talked about affordability. Communities may require up to 10% of the units be affordable, or up to 20% with proof that it would not be uneconomic to a developer to construct or include affordable units up to 20%. We actually went through the analysis. We contracted with consultants with this level of experience. They did the analysis for us and came back and determined that our district could not accommodate a higher percentage than the 10%. But it is the plan of the town to include that 10% affordability requirement. And part of that reason is to try to keep up with that need for affordable housing, and also to try to keep up with the 10% requirement of 40B of your subsidized housing inventory.
Yep, but Stephanie, I think say like the type of project that we're talking about right here is a little bit different than say like a 40B, where with a 40B, if you meet that 10% affordable, then you know all the units can count towards your SHI. Is that accurate? Whereas in this case,
it's if it's a multifamily, and Wayne will, I know he'll pop up and correct me. Mm-hmm. If it's a 40B and it's for rent, mm-hmm. rental apartments, then if 25% are affordable, mm-hmm. all those units count towards your SHI. So you are correct, Peter. In this instance, all the units were not count towards the SHI.
Yeah, I just figured I'd point that out, right? Yeah. So that's kind of a high threshold to meet anyways, right? Yeah. It might not be economical in general.
Yes. Yes. But it's a good point. Okay. So, all right. We already mentioned that we need to be compliant by the end of the year. And communities that aren't compliant will become ineligible for various infrastructure and planning grants. I have a slide here that shows these are the three main grants that we know of so far. There are others and probably will be others, will become less competitive in grants where we won't be completely ineligible, for competitive grants, they kind of rank you based on certain criteria. And if you're an MBTA community and you don't adopt the zoning, you'll be ranked a little bit lower. But these grant programs, we will not be eligible for if the town does not vote to adopt the zoning. They include the MassWorks Infrastructure Grant. And you can see from the list here that Easton has benefited quite a bit from this programming. Most recently, we did receive a $250,000 grant for the roadway improvement designs for the Foundry Street project. And in 2019, $1.5 million towards the Furnace Village or Five Corner District sewer. The Housing Choice Capital Grants are generally planning grants, and we've received a number of those. And then the Complete Streets program. In total, I don't think I have all the grants listed here, but in total, since 2011, Easton has benefited in the amount of around $8 million in grants. This year alone, the grant cycle for these grants begins in June of each year. We submitted four applications, and in October, we learned that we were awarded all four of those grants, totaling $400,000. Mm-hmm. Some of the other reasons to comply are that it helps Easton achieve the town's housing goals and those goals that have been identified in past planning efforts. So the Affordable Housing Trust Action Plan identifies increasing the availability of affordable housing, continue to promote diversification of housing types, and again, ensure more housing affordable for seniors and families among the outcomes of the implementation of the multifamily zoning requirement for MBTA communities. And the Envision Easton Master Plan talks about matching opportunities for housing that meets the needs of all Easton's residents. So, Peter, I'm going to talk about this, and then maybe as we start talking about the zones, you want to introduce those? Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's been a lot of activity going on in getting to this point. So one of the things I forgot to mention is while the deadline for adoption is the end of the year for the town, we plan on advancing this to town meeting and are hoping to get it passed at town meeting in May. And if it doesn't pass in May, that gives us another opportunity to try again at the fall meeting. Mm-hmm. In 2022, the Executive Office of Housing and Economic Development issued guidelines. The Select Board was briefed on what the zoning requirements were, and appointed a MBTA implementation review team that spent a couple of months going through the guidelines. They drafted goals and guiding principles for developing the districts, and they identified 8 potential areas where the districts might be located. After the DHCD, and now, which is now the Office of Housing and Livable Communities, issued the final guidelines in the end of 2021. And I'm sorry, that's 2022. The Planning Board actively started working on narrowing down the potential districts and holding public hearings, and in October 11th had the first public information session. And I think this is the 5th or 6th municipal board meeting that we've done a presentation to.
Yep. Stephanie scheduled a lot of these, so I'm attending as many as I can.
I was reminded today, Peter, that we have 19 scheduled in total. So these are just the parameters for the sub-district. I don't want to go into a lot of detail on that today. We do have a web page where we have more information about the zoning itself, about the law, and the proposed zoning, as well as the districts. And we have a number of Q&As answering questions that people have raised as we started talking about.
Yeah, so when we start with the districts here, I guess we sort of explained the process, right? So there was kind of the initial group that was appointed by the Board of Selectmen in almost a year ago, identified maybe it was like 7 or 8 potential districts. The Planning Board, had during our regular meetings, and with some public involvement, not as much at that point, but eventually chose 3 locations. The first of which is what we're calling the Foundry Eastman section. That's the target, that general area. There's Target, and you have the grocery store in the front, and then over to the left there, that's it was a woodworking, like a warehouse facility. Now it's a new business, some sort of distributor or something. That's the general area looking at. Now 3 districts.
Peter, I just want to point out, and this is the Avalon development.
Of course, Avalon. So now our 3 districts actually include, say, more buildable area, our potential units than we need. We're not planning on kind of going like any, allowing, we're not planning on zoning for more units than are really required, except for maybe like a small, allowance in case, the state, when they run the models, they have a slightly different outcome than what we expected. So we're looking for the correct land area and the approximately 900 potential units of multifamily zoning, which is a lot, right? So this is our, one of the areas that they had actually, I'll be honest, there had been some discussion that I didn't really, was my favorite idea was to put everything down here on Foundry. I didn't think that was, I think a lot of us were trying to, our boards were trying to be kind of equitable across the town. And we didn't think it was all that great of an idea just to put it all in one place, even though there were some merits to that idea. That is not the plan now. So this is a zone. This zone actually could be, we can cut this down by a bit. There is some vacant land here that is would most likely have a multifamily application in a year or two. Otherwise, Avalon's not likely to be redeveloped over the next any foreseeable future. Target, the grocery store, Plaza. That's kind of, who knows? We don't know exactly what would happen with that. Do you have any questions about this zone?
Peter, could I add some of the reasons?
Yeah, sure.
Or why? So one of the reasons this was attractive was that it's located in an area. You already have Target here, which is housing. If any of these lots were to redevelop or increase development on any of the sites, it's located in an area where you have a lot of commercial business going on. You have retail opportunity. This is where the new units of how of Avalon Housing is constructed. And then you have the Starbucks over here, which is very busy. I'm sure that Avalon is driving a lot of traffic to these areas. The grocery store seems to be thriving and doing well. So there are a lot of services that make it convenient for someone who lives here. It's in fairly close proximity to recreational lands. This is town-owned open space. So once Foundry Street is, the roadway improvements are completed, there will be a sidewalk system. And right now we believe it's going to be on the north side of Foundry Street. So people could walk not only to New Pond here, but they could walk further down to Old Pond and hopefully down to Swift's Park, which is a park that's being considered for redevelopment down at the intersection of Pequannocket Avenue and Foundry. And it's also a fairly short drive. It's 4 miles from the Mansfield MBTA station, and it's in close proximity to Route 95 and 140.
Yep. And also the sewer infrastructure.
That, thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, again, it's an area that we've already identified, right, as a potential for, say, multifamily or mixed use. So we didn't try to recreate the zones, recreate the work we've done over the last 10 years or so. So kind of on the same note, here's the Washington Belmont. Obviously the corner of Washington and Belmont. The large lot to the back there is a kind of a long, kind of a long, I don't know how long they've been there, but they've at least 20 years, right? Like a industrial manufacturing use.
Longer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then to the front there, you have the marketplace, which you might be, the owner could be interested in some redevelopment there. And then maybe some smaller lots along Belmont. Then Belmont Arms, that's actually an existing apartment building. At least one of the owners of some of those Belmont Street lots was
right over here.
Seemed a little bit excited about the potential for some redevelopment of his property. So again, this area is also sewered. There's additional reserve sewer available that could support some multifamily use here, maybe mixed use multifamily. So that's the primary reasons we chose this one. Again, this was already kind of on one of our areas we designated for growth, hopefully economic development, along with some of the other goals that have been discussed. Who was it? I think someone liked the idea of this area. What did you like about this?
Yeah, I guess I live very close to this area. And I think the point I was asking earlier was, while this is great that it's being redistricted to include some of the easy application process to put in these multifamily use properties and potentially develop this area, I was wondering, and there's probably a larger plan to incentivize these owners of these lots to do that, to redevelop, to either sell or do it themselves, whatever that is. I don't know how, that's probably a deeper conversation for another time, but what incentives are being provided to say, hey, now you're redistricted, let's try and help you get to that point where you can put in these new units.
Yeah, so if I could answer that, Peter.
Sure.
Last week when the board met and was focusing on this district and the next district that we'll be talking about. The owners of these properties were there. They purchased these because they knew that they were prime properties for redevelopment. And part of the incentive, the town, so the sewer extends up to the dentist's office, which I believe is right here. I've already confirmed with DPW that it can be extended. And if that were to happen, we'd work with these folks to find ways that could be another grant that we could apply for to pay for that extension. And that might be an incentive for them to develop. And this parcel over here already has multifamily housing. This is around 30 some odd units, and this is about 14 some odd units. And you can see there's some open space here. This looks like a ponded area. I'm not sure if it's the stormwater basin, but part of the land is taken up by the septic system. So if they could tie into that system, we might be able to see some infill development there.
And I actually did notice Crawford Gearworks on your priority plan, so that is an interesting one to think about what we could incentivize there. I don't think we're gonna we're trying to maintain kind of contiguous areas here, which is kind of more to the requirements of this particular state law, but we should keep that in mind there, and maybe we have some common ideas there. Okay.
Let me zoom in a little bit.
And this is Washington North, Roach Brothers. We kind of went back and forth on this. And you know, we actually had received a lot of input from some of the Foundry Street neighborhood people, and didn't like the they weren't all that fond of getting at least somewhere between 2/3 and 100% of the potential new multifamily under this this bylaw that we proposed. So we this was kind of our third option, and we decided to include it. In a way to maybe kind of balance the zones across the town and not just put them all in the neighborhood of some other people that have actually been pretty agreeable to growth, just they don't want to bear the entire brunt of the entire the changes that might happen here. So it looks pretty big. The area in the back is a bit of either wetland or stormwater, stormwater management kind of, which is essentially wetland and non-buildable. Then you have the Roach Brothers Plaza and most of the new medical buildings along the extreme northerly side there. And then kind of a couple more like plaza-ish things on the front and CVS. As well,
and
across the street, right? Mm-hmm. Correct. So again, we have a little more space than we need. We don't need all this space. Not even sure if I personally might not be in favor of going, doing a lot more than we need to. And I'm sure at least some of the people I happen to know feel similarly. So we're trying to make a balance, balance things out here to accommodate a lot of different constituents and people that that vote or go to town meeting.
So one of the things you'll find on the webpage is this matrix that just explains the total acreage, at least in the current configuration of each of those sub-districts, the capacity for housing units there, and then why it was felt that they were suitable or better suited for inclusion than the other eight districts, the other five.
Yeah, so hopefully we move that along for you there. Do you have any other questions or ideas? It's still in the works here. Or how we can kind of do more on the affordable, side rather than just requiring everyone to have 10% affordable. Might just be the basics there, right? Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I just have a quick question, technical one. Did you say that the minimum acreage was 90 acres for the Easton?
The minimum acreage is 50.
50.
50 okay. Acres, 50. Yep. Okay. And then the minimum total capacity that the district should be able to accommodate is 913 units.
Got it. Okay, sorry. Right.
So what you have to do is you have to take the zones that you're thinking of and run them through a complex model that the state put together, but our town staff is required to administer unless we wanted to pay some a consultant to do it or something. But the town, you know, the staff, Stephanie and Wayne did most of that work. So it's like, you know, so it's really the land area and then, you know, what the number of units that could be, you know, could be built on that based on the model. So there's kind of some different factors and they, you know, it excludes the wetlands and a lot of other things that probably wouldn't be worth getting into.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. So just quickly, important dates that are coming up. We already had January 10th. That was when the planning board discussed the last two zones that we just looked at, the Belmont Washington and the North Washington Roach Brothers. On February 12th, the board will be reviewing and finalizing the districts. Then on and that meeting will be held in the Corona Room. It will be a hybrid meeting so people can attend in person or via Zoom. Then on February 26th at Frothingham Hall will be the final public comment on those districts. And then on March 12th, the board will be deliberating, closing the hearing, deliberating, and then voting on what to advance to town meeting. As I mentioned earlier, we have a web page dedicated to this zoning, a lot of good information there. We think we've presented in a way that makes it easier for people to absorb. There are a lot of Q&As. And on behalf of the planning board, and Peter, I know you'll echo this. Okay. What we're looking for is we'd like you to share this information with people, direct them to the website, help them get educated on what the zoning means, what it is and what it isn't. You can direct them to me. Peter, I don't know if you want people calling you, but you know, we want to answer people's questions and we want your support as we go to town meeting.
Yep, great. Yeah, so thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Sorry, I had to charge my computer.
Great.
At least you had your charger handy. Sometimes it's been like in a piece of luggage in the trunk or something. Yeah.
That's it's just not in a place where I want video on. That's the only problem.
Yeah.
Kind of working with a makeshift office right now. So sorry about that.
A board member on another commission is in the process of moving. And so her background is a giant pile of moving boxes. And so what she's done is, you know, on Zoom, you can like have a photo or something as your backdrop. She's taken a photo of her office and that is her backdrop. And she doesn't move too much. It's like, oh, she's in Cambridge. Okay. It's pretty funny.
Not a bad idea. Okay. Well, that was a great presentation.
Yeah, I thought that was
very helpful. Yeah.
And
you guys have done such a good job on that. You know, I know that you've done a ton of work on that, Wayne. And I just am something I think about every time I see this presentation, or I haven't seen that presentation, but anytime I hear about this. And how much work has been gone into it, is how thoughtful every single stage of this has been, from, you know, each planned zoning, area. It's been very thoughtful.
Yeah, so, I remember you were a part of that early 2022 implementation review.
Very intro, yeah.
Early morning meetings, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that the three potential districts under consideration really are chosen to be in different parts of town, to be in parts of town that have already been identified as potential areas for mixed use and multifamily growth. I think they make a lot of sense as places to concentrate development. You know, there's a sort of differing opinions, you know, would the voters at town meeting prefer to see the a most minimal approach of, you know, just, you know, 913 units, or would people be supportive of a more expansive vision for all three visions, for all three sub-districts broadly as proposed? You know, it's both Belmont and North Washington as proposed seem to have very little in the way of opposition and some outright supporters. The, you know, so, you know, there'll be a few more meetings. They're hoping to finalize things in the next month or so. So I think if folks have, you know, strong feelings about what the ultimate district should look like, I would very strongly encourage you to come to some of these meetings and, you know, make that known as a public comment, because when the planning board determines what the sub-districts will be, that's what's going to be going forward to town meeting. So really the opportunity to sort of set, you know, what the possibility is going to be, you know, at that planning board meeting when they really make those decisions, is what the districts look like. And Stephanie also mentioned we got the economic feasibility study, and unfortunately it's pretty real that it's not economically feasible for a developer to provide more than 10% of the units affordable at 80% AMI. And that's three reasons. One, as of right zoning would make the land more valuable, therefore the site acquisition cost is more expensive. Interest rates are incredibly high, so construction loans are very, very expensive, and materials and labor costs are also very high. So you put those together along with anticipated rents or sales if there were condos, and it becomes economically unfeasible to get a reasonable return on investment for anything over 10%. So we really did try to maximize that. But the planning board is supportive in the draft zoning so far does envision the maximum allowed by the state of 10% affordable at 80% AMI.
One more quick question, and it's, I don't know, it's not even really relevant, but I always ask it. Just curious to know what other towns are doing that are MBTA adjacent communities. How are there still any outliers who are vowing not to comply? I know that when this started, we were way ahead of the game, and has everybody kind of joined in? Yeah, I just wanted to know.
I think, you know, it really varies. There's, I believe it's 177
total,
you know, cities and towns. As you saw on the map, it's basically the entire eastern third of Massachusetts. And there are outliers. You know, there are some towns very famously are, you know, refusing to adopt it, and, you know, threatening lawsuits and so forth. But I think most towns are making a good faith effort to comply with the law. And, you know, two things, you know, first, or, you know, three things. First up, you know, it is a state law.
Yeah.
It is state law. And then, you know, second is there are very valuable grants, like those big Mass Works construction grants that, you know, you cannot get if you do not comply with the state law. And then the third, and I think really biggest thing with this is, I think a lot of it is in the economic interest of the town. It actually maps or mirrors or reflects a lot of the envisioned Easton master plan from 2014 of growth areas of diverse housing types to support residents coming to Easton, being able to stay in Easton, whether they be young families, you know, senior citizens downsizing, people working in the service or the, you know, public employee sectors. So it you know, really does map along with what Easton has been focusing on for planning and development for the last, you know, 15 years or so. And, you know, Stephanie said, you know, give her a call. And obviously, if you all want to have a one-on-one, give me a call. I've been doing an awful lot of work on this. I've actually started having dreams about it. I'll be honest. So give me a call. If you have any questions, I would be very happy to, you know, troubleshoot answers for you. And, you know, like I said, do please come to the planning board hearing where they're going to adopt the sub-districts. I think registering your comments there is a real opportunity to help set what goes to town meeting.
Can you shout that date out one more time?
Isn't it the 12th?
February, right? 12th.
Wasn't it Monday the 12th?
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's their Monday, February 12th, and it's hybrid. It's like at 6:30. You can either come in person or, you know, join via Zoom. And I believe that's the hearing where they're gonna, you know, finalize the zoning and the sub-districts. And one of the reasons for that is, of course, to get to town meeting, you really need to know what you're taking to town meeting in February. And we've also sent the draft zoning and some draft districts in November off to the state for an early feedback and analysis. We haven't heard from them, so we're hoping to hear something in the next month or two to make sure that we're running the model correctly, that the zoning language actually works. This is a little bit far in the weeds. So the state has approved MBTA community zoning for several cities and towns, Salem and Lexington. I think last month or something, they officially approved Lexington's adopted zoning. And that's relevant to us because as we were trying to figure out what our zoning should look like, we went to Lexington's draft zoning and did effectively a copy paste. It's like, this is language that seems to work, that seems to be simple, that seems to hit everything it needs to hit. Yeah. So the fact that the state blessed it gives me a degree of comfort that, oh, okay, our zoning language should be workable.
Smart.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, they're very different. Lexington has different zones and different densities and so on, but broadly speaking, yeah.
Yep. Okay, great. Anyone have any other questions on that, or should we move on to the next agenda item? Okay, we can move on. So the next is the Affordable Housing Trust updates to CPC and Select Board.
At some point, we should put something together and get on the agenda for the CPC and the Select Board, you know, what we have been doing, what we hope to do. So maybe that could be something we talk about at the February meeting, and see what our, you know, what a slideshow or an update should look like. You know, the CPC, of course, is curious, you know, if they're funding the trust, what has the trust been doing? And, you know, the Select Board always appreciates hearing from various boards and commissions as to what they're working on. So, you know, I can try and start thinking about that in the next month or so, and, you know, maybe Nick and I could have some conversations about what it should look like, and we can strategize a bit more at the February meeting.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Get going on that.
Sounds like a great idea. And there are some questions that came up recently that I think would be awesome to hear from the trust to address. So awesome.
Can you share some of them so we know what to plan for, or?
Mostly just around balances on things that off the top of my head I couldn't answer, but us all hearing it together in the group would be fantastic.
Okay.
And tying it back into some of the ideas and plans. And I think any challenges you want to identify, or opportunities where broader support might be needed would be beneficial. So I think the timing is perfect.
Okay. We've been talking about getting a presentation together for several months. So I will definitely connect with Wayne with some starter points. And
Jen, we'd be happy to connect with you as well if you have a perspective from the select board side as to what would land well or what would be really of interest for them.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Yeah, awesome. That would be helpful. Thank you. That'd be huge.
Great.
Okay. And then I guess really the last thing, which I mentioned before the meeting started, is, when are we meeting in February? We should, since almost all of us are here, except for poor Sam, who couldn't make it, I feel bad about that. What evening in February works for people?
Let me see. Are we looking, so if we're going for
not the 14th or 15th from, for me, that's not going to work for me.
What day?
Not the 14th or 15th.
Okay.
I've got meetings that I'm out of town as well.
Yeah. We're in the February vacation window as well.
Is that the President's Day week? Is that
the week of the 19th. So
very nice.
Yeah, the 28th or the 29th would be good, I think. We get out of that window. Oh, we have a leap year this year.
Oh, I'm available either day.
Okay, I am as well.
How do we feel about like Wednesday the 28th at 6:30 again?
That works for me. Yeah,
that should be good.
I may have trouble because of a conference for work. I could try, but if you guys need to roll with it.
Would Thursday be better for that?
It's actually the Wednesday and Thursday of that week.
Yeah.
But the following week is fine, or could do February if we wanted to do earlier. That's probably too soon. February 7th and 8th or 5.
March is fine.
That first week in March is totally fine. Yeah.
Like March 6th?
Yeah.
Works for me as well. 6th and 7th.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, so you want to go for the 6th at 6:30?
Wednesday, March 6th, 6:30 p.m.
Perfect.
Okay. Sounds good.
That is great. And, things we should talk about is our work plan for the year. Our budget balances and how we want to reallocate and rationalize things. We have projects that are done. So, we should probably not have $27 remaining in these little sub-accounts.
Yep.
And Nikki, we may want to meet with, try and set up a meeting with town administration earlier, but there was some interest from the Affordable Housing Trust and receptivity from the select board on possibly using some of the now soon to be surplus municipal properties to meet Easton's housing needs. So we may want to dig into that and see what a timeline could look like for planning for that, how receptive folks would be. It would be several years out, of course, because obviously they're all still in use until the new facilities get built. So it's a little bit of a while, but if some or all of them could be used, there's going to be a lot of analysis needed, fiscal site analysis, a public process to see what, people think the needs would be that could be met at different sites. So we really want to think about that.
Yep.
So those are three big things I would have for a meeting Wednesday. And then I guess the fourth would be the what presentations would look like. So I think those are my four rough agenda items.
Great. All right.
Cool.
Well, Wayne, I'll plan to connect with you this week or next, start working on a outline of a presentation. I've been meaning to do that for a while, so.
Yeah, that'd be great. Cool.
And if no one has anything else, I think that that covers it for us tonight until March 6th.
Yeah, so what is this, motion and a second to adjourn and a roll call vote?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
And I'll second it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll call on people again. Dustumian.
Yes.
Where did we get to? Rodriguez.
Rodriguez, yes.
Stacy.
Stacy, yes.
Sheedy.
Sheedy, yes.
Steven.
Steven, yes.
And Miller.
Miller, yes.
We are adjourned at 7:44.
Thank you all.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks, people. See you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Take care.